Hi, everybody. This is co-host Philip Simondet. Host Matthew McLeod is not dead yet, as of this recording. He's just not here, and we needed to put out this episode for you. This is an old episode. It's one that we recorded months ago, before the hiatus. But it was such a fun interview and bat that we wanted to share it with you. Joe Bozek, Heather Meyer, Mike Fotis, Ian Fishman, and Abe Vanderbent came to discuss a cool program that had run at the Brave New Workshop Student Union called Sketch Lab. They had done a few months of shows and then took a break and has not yet returned to the stage. Brave New Workshop, in that meanwhile, has changed locations. Stage Match is also on a hiatus at the moment. They took a break for the holidays, and there's still no word when that is starting again. But we just wanted to share this episode for your enjoyment.
Hi, I'm Philip.
I'm Matt.
First we'll have a little chat,
then put on our ring rubber.
Now it's time for Next at Bat!
And we're here today with Sketch Lab. Hi, Sketch Lab.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, well, technically you're not a group and that's not your name, but that's, we're here today with the creators of Sketch Lab. Sketch Lab is a, you can talk about what it is, but it happens over at the Brave New Workshop, Brave New Institute Student Union?
BNW Student Union.
Brave New Workshop Student Union?
Sure.
Okay.
Yep.
I don't know what the name is technically.
We try and make it as confusing as possible for marketing purposes.
Which is 2605 Hennepin Avenue South, and it happens often on Saturday nights, and you can talk more about the scheduling. But if you guys could you please introduce yourselves?
Sure. I'm Joe Bozek, director of the Brave New Workshop Student Union Institute World University, and one of the, makers and directors of Sketch Lab.
Awesome.
I'm Heather Meyer. I frequently direct for Sketch Lab.
Yeah. I'm Mike Fotis. I was the co-director of the Brave New Workshop Student Union 2605 Workshop, but I'm not anymore, but I helped come up with the idea for Sketch Lab.
Hey, I'm Ian Fishman, and I am also one of the directors of Sketch Lab.
I'm Abe Vanderbent. I've written and performed in Sketch Lab, as well as assistant directing, teching, a little bit of everything.
Abe's worn almost all the hats.
Whoa. And as always, I am here today with
Philip Simondet, and your host, as always,
is Matt McLeod, who has not participated in Sketch Lab. Not yet. So, first, could you tell us a little bit about Sketch Lab? There's kind of a movement. Sketch is growing in the Twin Cities, and one of the big reasons why is what's happening over at Brave New Workshop. And Sketch Lab is a big part of it. So, can you explain kind of what Sketch Lab's doing to, you know, increase sketch?
Yeah. I'll go ahead and take this one.
All right.
Over the past, I'd say, 10 years or so, the improv scene has really blossomed here in the Twin Cities. And, you know, so much that it supports its own theater, and there are classes and all that stuff happening all over the place. But the world of sketch, even though it's been around for a long, 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 long time, it hasn't grown quite the same way as improvisation has. So sort of what the goal was for Mike and I was to create a way for people to learn the art of sketch writing in the Brave New Workshop style, and then start using these skills to actually put on shows and get some experience writing and performing sketch comedy, which is a little bit different than regular theater, because it's just that, you know, it's sort of different. It demands much more of an attack. It demands sort of being able to switch between multiple characters as you go through the show and do a review. It's just sort of a way that we want to help grow the scene a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so in terms of Sketch Lab, the format, it's not where a bunch of people just submit sketches or something like that. Could you kind of explain how this particular format works?
Well, and other directors jump in on this one, but we sort of try to treat it like we're putting together a show at the main stage at the Brave New Workshop. So everybody gets together, and there's always been sort of a loose theme for the shows, but I wouldn't say that it was, although Heather's show was pretty theme-based, but for the most part, it's just sort of a starting point. And then from there, we have people come in with sketch ideas, and we sort of assign first drafts, and then it's a really fast process. It's only 5 weeks. which is another part of the show that's important in order to like make sure the show gets done. You can't have a rambling rehearsal process.
Right.
Absolutely. So it makes it maybe a little stressful. Actually, it makes it a very stressful experience, and it probably needs to be tweaked just a little bit. But I think everybody would agree that you can't have it go too much longer than 5 or 6 weeks. Otherwise, people's commitment levels, for reasons that make perfect sense because of scheduling and everything else, mm-hmm. they just can't agree to do that type of show. Sure. So we, the one I direct, and I think everybody else's was fairly similar, but it was, and actually Ian and I co-directed ours, but it was the writing process was like 3 weeks long. So we discussed sketch ideas, brought in first drafts the next week,
revised.
Then the next week you brought in your seconds, which are essentially final drafts. Although Ian and I, and I think Heather, kind of like from that point sort of took on the role as head writer and made changes that needed to be changed. Mm-hmm. And then you get a couple weeks to rehearse and then it's up. So it's really, really fast. And by a couple of weeks, I mean like Saturday afternoons. Mm-hmm. So it's not, there's not a lot of meeting time for this. But in some ways, I think that's good because I think one of the things that I've learned as a freelance writer, and I think other people who are freelance writers know, is the idea of a really long deadline doesn't really exist. You've got to get stuff done really fast.
Right.
So I think that that's a good skill to learn.
I think that that kind of setup also, I think that it lends itself to a good kind of controlled chaos with it,
mm-hmm.
where you've had a, you know, as you're going through the rehearsal process, you've got those 2 weeks to put them together. So you basically get 2 weeks to block everything out and then you're kind of up.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, one of the things that I really appreciate about having that kind of short timetable, that kind of short turnaround, is the fact that everybody just gets a handle on where they're going and there's no chance for it to get stale.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's constantly, everybody's very much on their toes. Everybody's pushing for more jokes.
I would imagine there's a lot of focus and a lot of energy.
You would hope so. I mean, there's...
Or at least a lot of energy.
There's definitely a lot of energy. The focus thing can be, like, that's actually one of the challenges, is making sure that, you know, because you've got that turnaround, that you can get all of that done to get your whole show up.
Sure.
But yeah, I think that I really like that element of it.
There's an exciting part of SketchLab where, because you have the 5 weeks to put up the show, you're writing it for the first three, but then you switch from writing to being a performer, which as a lot of people, maybe they favor being a writer over being a performer or vice versa. So having to use all of your skills is a really exciting thing and kind of increases that stress in a way, depending on what your stress zone is, whether it's memorizing lines or getting a completed draft done. It keeps you going and it kind of contributes to that stress, but in a great way.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
It also does a really nice job of forcing you to not be precious about what you're putting out there.
Mm-hmm.
That you really do have to get something ready for the stage in such a short period of time that you really have to just be able to go with whatever needs to be done so that you're ready to just get on that stage and have it be ready for people. It was really nice for me because I know I definitely can be precious if I'm given a lot of time. Well, at SketchLab, I know I have to get things done very quickly. And so it really was a nice lesson in that, I guess, and just reminder of not being too precious about what you're putting out, because it's going to come and go, and that's that.
It should probably also be said that the people that participate in SketchLab are students of the Brave New Workshop Student Union.
Right.
So everybody that participates has gone through Sketchwriting 101 at the BNWSU, which means they have some experience of writing with a team, sort of being open to giving and getting feedback.
Mm-hmm.
So right from the get-go, we know that we're going to be working in a much more positive environment, an environment that is very open to different ideas, different suggestions, different input from everyone else, which I think that positive environment helps foster an environment that we can actually get the show done.
Yeah, and it was interesting because we also tried, Joe and I, as Ferrari McSpeedy, we did double bills for these shows for the most part. And in, was it April, I guess, is when we did that one?
Let's say, yeah.
How can I remember? So Joe and I did a sketch show, and then one of the Sketch Lab teams did a show. And that double bill of experience with maybe a little bit less experience, I think, ended ended up with a pretty fun, nice evening. And I don't know what the plan is moving forward, but, you know, but I think that that was a kind of, I liked that mixture. It felt,
it was a good dynamic.
Yeah.
One thing with that too, and speaking to what Joe was saying before about the positivity that, that comes through, coming through the student union and everybody being a part of this process is one of the things that, that I really like about this program. And again, with just with timetable and with the kind of atmosphere that it is we also want to give people the experience of what it's like to write sketch professionally.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And certainly, I mean, you know, everybody knows that for SNL, like your turnaround time is, it's literally a week.
Yeah.
And for a lot of people who want to be moving towards a career track with this stuff, it's important to have those kinds of deadlines while also doing that in an environment where we're not going to just shoot each other's ideas down like happens outside of here.
Right. And it's also writing for stuff that you don't necessarily want to write for all the time, if that makes sense. So like you turn in a first draft and like Heather, Joe, or Ian, or Abe is like, this is good, but we kind of need it to go in this direction. I think that's a really valuable skill to learn because, mm-hmm. like, I think a lot of writers think it's always going to be, I'm writing comedy and this is exactly what's happening. But, mm-hmm. yeah. like, to develop a career as a writer, you're going to take on lots of projects that you don't necessarily, you can't talk about, you know, a drunk leprechaun or whatever. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, like, learning that skill of writing to a project goal and stuff like that, I think is really valuable. I look at this completely as a sort of a writer's workshop kind of show. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I think the directing part of it and the putting up of it's really, really interesting. But the part I really enjoyed was the writing rehearsal part of it. So,
well, and I mean, I think that's the job of the head writer is to, I mean, is to focus everything. And and so the, I mean, and the job of a director in any sort of stage show is to have a clear goal in mind and to help push everybody in that direction. So I suppose what you're talking about, that's, it is good experience for young writers to take notes and to sit and to hear, you know what, this part of the sketch is, that's not going to play here, let's keep this, lose this, and let's see more of this stuff. Do you find that the that people are pretty receptive to that? Is it a pretty nurturing sort of environment in this case?
Absolutely. I think it's really exciting to have a writer's workshop kind of feel, because you take class and that's the same feeling, but then once you're out of class, you're just writing by yourself.
Right.
And you don't have that outside input. Here you're in that structure on a regular basis and you have feedback from your group and your director on what to do, and you learn a lot about things like, oh, maybe having a giant spaceship is not necessary because of logistics, even though that could make this, that makes the sketch amazing. You have to think, oh, we're putting this show up in 5 weeks with without a spaceship, and then having to write with that in mind. So it's kind of a fun challenge.
Philip, can you take a note that I would like a giant spaceship on the show?
We talked about this, man.
Okay. In terms of directing it, so Are the writers the actors in this case? Okay. So how easy, I mean, I'm guessing that for some of the writers are like, oh, I'm a writer, not an actor. Or are a lot of these people experienced in, say, the improv world or the acting world, and so they're comfortable, as comfortable on stage as they are in the writing room? How's that transition work?
For the cast I worked with, the majority of them were comfortable doing both. And there was a couple who, I think, did a great job, but would openly say that I'm a writer. You know what I mean?
Right.
So they weren't as comfortable doing it. But this is a show where you have to be able to do both.
Okay.
And what's interesting is, like, at the workshop, Joe and I were sort of trained, like, if you write your sketch, the expectation is that you're in it.
Yeah.
And here, people were really deferential. They're like, oh, I don't need to be in this. And I know for me, I kept being like, let's get this very, very clear right now. It's your voice, so you're going to be in this sketch unless you can give me a really solid reason why you're not.
You have a better understanding of the timing of and the interview.
You can make it work.
Yeah.
If anyone, you have to be your sketch advocate. So offering to not be in it is doing you no good. You know, so I thought that was really interesting.
I think the May sketch show was the first one that had just writers. We had a group of three people that just wrote because we were doing topical stuff. We had come up with new headlines and things like that. So we did have a few people that just wrote and didn't perform. But that was new. I think that was the first time we did anything like
that. Did they feel like they're... I was going to ask you this. Did they feel like they were really separate from the process? Or?
No, they came in. They were there for a lot of the rehearsals when we were blocking, putting it up on stage. They were there for a lot of the tech and stuff like that. And they came to the performances. And I think for them, it was really neat to see their work get put up on stage and see it change while it was, you know, being blocked and all that kind of stuff. Because I think, you know, you can sit and you can write a sketch and be pretty happy with it. Even going through the editing process, you know, draft two, draft three, you can feel pretty good about it. But that sketch is going to change when you give it to somebody to perform.
Absolutely.
And you don't necessarily see how it's going to change until you get it up on its feet. So
I would imagine for a lot of writers, I mean, like you mentioned, Heather, once you're done with the classes, you're at home writing, but you don't get to see it happen. You only get to see it in your head. For a lot of writers, this is the first time that they get to see their kind of more matured work put up on stage. Have you gotten any feedback from the writers about what that experience has been like? Is it what they thought it would be?
In the show that I directed, I got a lot of feedback that people were really excited to see for the first time something that they'd written performed. I had one individual that was just a writer in that show, and he was with us all through the rehearsal process and then wasn't able to come until the third or fourth show.
Oh.
So he got to see a really well rehearsed, very confident version of that sketch and was extremely excited about that. So it does add that awesome feeling that you'd never get at home when you write stuff.
Yeah.
It's always one of the coolest things about writing for me anyway, is being able to see just, I feel like that's the best way to find out just what you've written, is by handing that off to somebody else and then watching them put it up, because there are always going to be certain things that are in your head that are just clear as day. And then you realize like, oh, I didn't put in my stage directions that he had to wear a red shirt. No wonder why this isn't working, you know, or sure. something like that. Like it's, you know, it forces you to be a better writer from that experience, to know how to be as clear as possible with your vision.
To write in a way that couldn't be misunderstood.
Exactly.
Right.
As I had a teacher once who called it making your writing director proof.
Use the phrase making it your writer actor proof.
Like,
if can an actor perform this without needing the writer next to them?
Sure.
I think that's really interesting, because like I would say one of my things I still need to get better at as a writer is it too much my voice? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Is one of the characters too reliant on how I would play it, as opposed to just this character and setting funny? Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Like, that's still Absolutely. Something that I really struggle with. So it's interesting to hear you guys talk about that, because I would view it from that standpoint a lot while people were writing stuff. It's like, well, is this standalone funny, or is it funny because I know that like Alex is going to do a really good job with this line of dialogue and stuff, and maybe it doesn't matter. I don't know.
I would fire back with, I think that would just define voice. And I mean, you look at the classic voices of, you know, say modern theater, you've got like, you know, Edward Albee and Samuel Beckett and stuff like that. A lot of their stuff like reads the same. David Mamet. I have a hard time thinking that they were trying to separate themselves from their work. I mean, I think that they really dove in.
Well, sure, but that's also a process, though, too. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's not like it's not like Mamet woke up one day and he was Mamet. Like,
oh, right.
You know,
yeah, absolutely.
And a lot of that is of course figuring out, you know, I feel like you're going to need to test those limits and push yourself at different points. Of course, like with anything, you know, but also with writing, kind of realizing how the best way that I can explain it, I guess, for me anyway, is where I end and then my piece begins.
Right. And I think that part of it is that collaborative. I mean, what happens when, you know, Philip Simondet reads a Mamet work?
He swears a lot.
Yeah, but I mean, there's that. And so Mamet has a distinct voice, but then when an actor picks it up, there's the collaboration.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's so interesting you bring up Mamet, because Mamet would prefer you just read it and put in.
Just read my fucking words.
Yeah, that's a classic line.
Yeah, just say.
Yeah, just say my fucking words. That's
Along with that, I think it's the cool thing with SketchLab is that because you're, this is a random group of people every time.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a group so far. It hasn't been a group that's been the same or have even worked together. So you're writing for people to perform that you may have never seen perform, or you might not know them, which can be an awesome challenge if you see something in them, but you've not seen them perform. So you're not always, oh, this person does a really great clerk character. I'm going to have him do that.
Right.
Because we all are looking for someone to do a really good clerk character.
Everybody needs a clerk.
All my clerk sketches.
It's the hardest one to cast.
I used to be typecast as clerk.
Well, and I didn't know that, and now I can put you in those. But it gives you the chance of, you look at these, it's like looking at your toys that you have. What story do you get to tell with maybe these toys you've never played with? So there's that.
I definitely noticed that with the April show, especially, of just a group of people where there was, I had seen everyone in that group perform, but a lot of the performers from that show had mainly done shows over at Huge and not Brave New Workshop. Mm-hmm. And so, all these names, not a lot of them had seen Dave Kapelhoff perform before. And so it was interesting getting to watch them, everyone in that cast, learn just how great he is at writing and performing sketch. As the process went along, said the beginning, he just got cast as a lot of dad parts when we were doing read-throughs. And so
on a personal level, I was just really, being a huge fan of Dave and thinking that he is sort of underrated in the community, I was really thrilled to see him kind of crush that show. You know what I mean?
Yeah, his there are sketches where his performance, you know, for those who got to see it, American Family Dinner, the sketches, like, I love sketches like that, where it's just like, you know, there's very little that's explained. It's just kind of an idea that's put out there, but that sketch would never work without, like, some incredible acting chops and just a great sense of timing and rhythm and what the sketch needed. It was, for those who didn't see it, it was an all-silent sketch about a family dinner in which a dad just breaks down and everybody just ignores him during the course of this dinner. And he played it so beautifully. It was one of the favorite acting moments I've ever seen on that stage.
Yeah, it was cool.
So Brave New Workshop is the oldest satirical sketch comedy theater in the country. And so for years in the Twin Cities, the only steady sketch that occurred was on the main stage at the Brave New Workshop. Is that correct?
I think, as far as I know, yeah.
As far as I know, I think that's correct. And then, I mean, it would pop up here and there at other theaters and Fringe. You know, that, and so now with the rise of in popularity with improvisation, it does seem like there's this kind of gap between there's a lot of want for sketch, and does that seem accurate? And but it's more difficult to put on than improv.
Because
of the process.
You can't just show up 20 minutes before a sketch show.
So where do you see sketch going in the near future? Like, Sketch Lab's around, and it's going to be around for a while, hopefully.
Yep.
And what else do you see in the future for kind of growing the community?
What I think is really, really necessary for the community right now is sort of nurturing this core talent that we have for sketch like in the improv community, there's like close to 40 or 50 people who I'd be like, oh yeah, any combination of these folks on a team, it's going to be pretty fun. There's just, those numbers aren't there right now in the sketch community,
right?
For at least people who, like, if you're not counting like main stagers at the BNW, like there's like 15 of us right now who are sort of committed to, all right, we're going to put 5 weeks of our lives into this and get a show. So I feel like finding a way to nurture that community and sort of start to build it that way. What I'm getting at is, the thing that makes me the most nervous about it is it's going to be a slow grow. Mm-hmm. So how do we maintain momentum but trust that growth?
Do you feel like this is the start of something now? Like this is finally in its infancy to actually grow a community where there hasn't really been one except for the main stage in the past?
I feel like it can be. I think that one of the big things that I see as a challenge for the scene and for growing the scene, and it's something that some of us had butt up against before too, or not necessarily butt up against, but tried to work with. Heather and I had a group for a while called The Third Kind that Joe directed as well. And I feel like, and it was an independent group. And I feel like that's one of the things that we need to see more of, is more people who are going, I know what I want to do. I'm not afraid to book my own shows. I'm not afraid to find the people that I want to work with, and then just start contacting theaters and getting up anywhere that they can.
So not structured through a venue.
Yeah. I mean, that's okay. one of the great things about building the scene the way that we are is that, as Mike was saying, there's very much a core of talent. There's a pool of people who are very much into sketch, but it's also all through the BNWSU, which is always going to be, I feel like it's always going to be the hub. How could it not be?
Sure.
But at the same time, like, I think that once we see more people taking the initiative to produce their own stuff is when we're really going to see our sketch scene start to explode.
Yeah.
And I think Sketch Lab is a great launching point to get people the confidence to do that.
Absolutely.
Once you've had the experience of, this is how a show is built, you need to meet for rehearsal, you need to write, you need to rewrite, you need to work with people, then you have the confidence to make arrangements to book a show and commit yourself that you're now driving the bus.
Yep.
That you're the one that has to make it happen, connect the people, and go, which is a very scary step. Because if you haven't had that experience of putting up your own work, it feels like you don't even know where to start.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think Sketch Match, which is something we did after the Kevin McDonald workshops, where he kind of showed you how to improvise a sketch, re-improvise the sketch, write out the beats. So it's a really nice, it's like right in between improv and sketch worlds.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a show that we were doing at the SU. We kind of shelved it for a while to see how Sketch Lab could go. But that's a show I think that needs to be modified and nurtured again, because I think that that's a great way to build it a little bit more, because it's a lot faster. Like, it's a long afternoon, but it's just an afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, like, if we could find a way to get that show going again,
mm-hmm.
whether it's at the SU or someplace else, I don't know. I'm just saying, like, a consistent weekly show like that where people are like, oh, it's sketch, but every single week I go, it's going to be a different series of sketches, and maybe the best two sketches from the week prior stay. You know what I mean? But everything else is new. I think that's kind of an important step too, because it maybe circumnavigates the idea of burning out, or the very real possibility of burning out the 15 people who are super into it right now.
Right.
So.
Yeah. And that is, I mean, if you take a look back in 2000, early 2000s, the improv scene sort of followed the same trajectory of, you know, there was the Seabreeze, Brave New Workshop, and Brave New Institute at that time, and Comedy Sports, if you wanted to perform. But it was also around that time that groups started renting out theaters, groups started having the confidence of saying, I think improvisation can exist away from these places. So you had, you know, teams like The Collective and Finger Gun and Velvet Elvises and Five Man Job in the early years that were going.
Unitard.
They were all going out and they started renting out spaces. So yeah, I think if sketch groups start to do the same kind of thing, especially this core, we could, in just a short 10 years, have a very similar scene to the improv scene.
It's funny, you know, you say, you know, just a short 10 years, but it, I mean, obviously, as you said, with the improv scene, it takes that time to build a scene of any kind. I mean, it doesn't matter, you know, whether what kind of art that you're looking at, like all of those scenes, like it seems like it's, as you read about them through history, it doesn't take that long, because it's like, oh, it's 5 years. But that's still like they had to go through those fucking 5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
5 years to an artist is a long time.
It's a long time. But that's also normal. Like you have to give yourself a chance to suck and a chance to grow and a chance to find your voice.
Yeah.
I mean, as an actor, one of the best pieces of advice that I got early on is that it takes a good 5 years just to just to get like anywhere close to steady work.
Yes.
Generally. Yeah. Like that's an average, you know, it's give or take, but it's certainly the same thing with any kind of art form, especially when you start to grow it out just beyond like, you know, a couple of people. One thing that I find really exciting about this though is I like the idea, I like as it grows being able to get the Twin Cities on the map nationally.
Right.
Regarding our sketch scene. I'm a huge fan of sketch fests. And I would really love to be able to bring one here within the next couple of years.
Yeah, and I'd love to see like some writers start to get hired for shows and stuff like that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's one of the really exciting things about taking something that has so much potential and growing it is that you have the chance to be the pioneers. And and that's always fun to really leave your mark on what, you know, something could end up being great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, because Ian and I have talked, I think everybody around this table is pretty into the idea, but like the idea of a sketch fest is really, really exciting to me. Mm-hmm. But like, I don't want to do one until I feel like there's five local groups who could kick ass and do the double bill. Like, I feel like bringing in a bill of all out of towners isn't the right way to start sketch fest. You know what I mean? So
the Twin Cities Gun for Hire Sketch Fest.
Kinda, you know what I mean?
So. Yeah. Yep.
So I'm gonna do a modified version of my usual Matt's,
all right,
whatever the fuck it's called.
Doesn't have a name.
No, it doesn't have a name. So maybe we can spend 5 weeks coming up with one. all right. So a couple of questions. What individually for you guys, if you could nail a running time for your sketches, what is your ideal run time for your sketch?
For one individual sketch. Oh my goodness, I can't do that because to me it so depends on what kind of sketch, what type of sketch. I know that's a total cop out.
That's okay.
So 4.5 minutes.
Okay.
I'll say 3 minutes and 10 seconds.
I'll say 2.5 minutes because I think everything could be shorter than the writer thinks.
I agree.
I'm going to change mine to $2.25.
$1.
I would like to change mine to 90 seconds.
Actually, mine is about 90 seconds. Mine is literally between, I'd say, like a minute 30 to a minute 45. That's part of why anybody who knows me knows that I'm a huge fan of punk rock. And part of why I like it is because you take one idea and you hit it really hard. You go in a couple of different directions with it, but you have your one core idea and you punch it and then you're out and then you go on to something else. I love blackout sketches where it's just one beat and done. There's a group out of New York called Too Much Light Makes the Baby Go Blind. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, like 45 plays in 40 minutes. It's that kind of stuff like that. That really gets me going.
Did they start in Chicago or New York?
Yes, the Neo Futurists.
Yeah. Yes, they did. Yep.
2 minutes for all the reasons that have been said.
All the reasons.
That is the best edited answer. Abe took everything. He's still there. I gave the best answer.
See, that's the hallmark of a good head writer, though, is to be like, all this stuff.
Is there one idea that you've never been able to make work that you just really want to make work?
Yep. Yeah. I've had an idea. I wrote a draft of it, but was like half a draft once for the Nikola Tesla Variety Hour. Just a variety show, singing, dancing, interviews, the whole thing hosted by Nikola Tesla with Thomas Edison just heckling him the entire time. And it's... turns out it's really hard to write a sketch about Tesla that requires no one to know who Tesla is. So it's still back there. I really want to do it at some point, but it has not come together yet.
Physics keeps stumping mine because I have this image of somebody being able to ejaculate so hard that it's just an atomized mist. That then impregnates everybody in like a 6-foot radius around them. And
is this a sketch or just what you want life to be?
No, this started, well, I guess both. I mean, it's art. So it's life is art. But yeah, that's one visual that I would like to make real.
To release on the world?
To release. to impregnate the world with, at least within 6 feet around me.
Isn't that how fish mate?
I think it is. Yeah.
Is it?
I think you're right.
I didn't know that.
Fish I think sketch. Like that's how salmon do it, right?
Or something. Oh, is that like how that. Fish the band?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, as Fishman a Fishman, wants, holy shit. Oh!
Guys, I might need to go out early and figure this out.
I, at the Brave New Workshop, had a... I don't know. I think I had a reputation for having the most sketches not making out of previews. Yeah. Writers tend to think my sketches are funny, but general audiences don't very much. So Joel know the one that I'm talking about. And we've tried it several times. Is one where my penis sues me for damages because I masturbate too hard, and we built right? You guys are all laughing, but you know why were you at the shows 4 years ago? Never done a sketch to more silence, but there was a puppet.
Yep.
Ellie Hino played a judge. Bobby Gardner played
a southern lawyer.
Lauren Anderson was my penis's attorney. it was epic. It was a 7-minute epic. And I remember reading it, and everybody in the cast was like, yay! And Caleb was like, it'll never work. We'll try it, but it'll never work. And we were like, it will work, Caleb! And he was pretty darn right about that.
I will say, if I can jump in, if you ever have a chance to see Lauren Anderson play a lawyer that uses big words wrong, it is marvelous.
Yeah, it's amazing.
That sounds incredible, mm-hmm. Yeah. I could watch hours of that.
Me? Guys, I constantly want to write sketches about terminal illnesses that, unfortunately, a lot of those affect a lot of people's lives. Mm-hmm. And it's very hard to make that funny. I have written 2 breast cancer sketches, 1 that I use regularly in auditions, and then I wonder why I don't get cast. I think they're hilarious. And if you looked at it, you would agree, but it is it's too close to home. It will always be too close to home until we cure cancer. Yeah. So it's just something that I always want to write about, but it's not for an audience because it's not ever going to be for an audience.
Yeah.
The end.
Well, you even brought us
I brought the room down. Exactly, guys.
Hey, it could be. That's one of the nice things about living in 2014 is we have the internet. We have access to people all over the place. So you could still find your audience for that idea.
I could. And someone like me. But I also want to be respectful of folks who are going through those situations.
Just cure cancer real quick.
Yeah. I'm working on that. So that's kind of where I thought I'd start.
I've had lots of sketches, I'm sure, that I've written and never saw the light of day. But the one recently that's been, and I'd say like the past year or year and a half, that's been sort of hanging over me, I listen to a lot of the local jazz station. Mm-hmm. And if you listen to the jazz station late at night, they just let on DJs that know a lot about jazz, but don't know how to DJ a radio station. So, to be able to capture that, I haven't been able to do it yet, but that is one thing I've been trying to, because they will just start rambling about, one day I saw a picture of Miles Davis and he was shaking hands with John Coltrane and I looked at that picture, and they'll just go on these stories that make absolutely no sense, and they mean it does nothing except it's a chance for this DJ to reminisce for a good 15 minutes. It's great. I can't write that.
Well, I don't think I can top that. So I'm going to throw the microphone over to Philip Simondet for a brand new segment that we call Philip's Corner. It's Philip's Corner.
Whenever Matt knows that he can't top something, he throws it to me because he knows that I cannot top it either.
That's friendship right there.
That's friendship.
That's love.
There's a bunch of you, so we'll do quick answers. We'll try to be quick.
Less
with this.
Than 90 seconds.
We'll do punk rock answers.
Punk rock answers.
If you don't know, this is a new segment of the show where I'm going to stare at you all awkwardly, one at a time, and improvise a question as I stare into your beautiful blue eyes, Joe Bozak.
Mm-hmm. Are they blue?
They're like a blue-gray right now.
Yeah. mostly gray. I'm aging.
Just love that smooth answer of yeah.
Joe.
Mm-hmm.
You're aging.
Yep.
10 years from now,
mm.
What do you want to be way better at?
What do I want to be way better at? 10 years from now, finger picking on an acoustic guitar.
Oh.
Yes. And I figure about 10 years is a good time. If I start today.
Have you started today?
No, I haven't started yet. But maybe I'll go home, get some new strings for the old beaten up guitar that I have in my house, and start learning some Robert Johnson songs.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Heather, you're aging.
Every minute.
10 years ago from today, what could you not imagine have been able to do, which you can now?
Oh my God. I gotta do some quick math.
Be 1934.
Yeah, thank you. Electricity, internet. 10 years ago, I have a fortunate opportunity. I recreate sketch comedy all day long because I work at the National Theater for Children during the day, making educational sketch comedy for kids, and then at night I write about terminal illness at home. So I didn't think 10 years ago that that's something I could be doing or wanted to be doing necessarily. The end.
Right. Mike, you're aging.
I know.
Write your obituary for us. You die exactly 10 years from today.
Showed promise. Lots of wasted opportunities. Mm-hmm.
It's a tombstone.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, okay. But I don't think I would do much more than that. I think my obituary would probably be like an eBay list of stuff that had stolen in my house that people could like.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
That's such a great visual too.
Ian.
Yeah.
You're aging backwards.
Ooh.
Oh. When you were 10,
mm-hmm.
Who was your hero?
10 years old? This dude named Glenn Plake, who is a professional skier, who still to this day, so there have been hourglass-shaped skis in skiing for about 20 years now. He still to this day uses super long, completely straight skis, and he has about a 2-foot mohawk. And he's known for, he's an extreme skier. He hucks cliffs and has a giant mohawk, and that's basically his life. That was my hero then. That's kind of still my hero today.
I was going to say, nothing about that. Yeah, right?
What was his name again?
Glenn Plake.
Glenn Plake.
Yep.
Cool. Abe, you're not aging at all. You live forever. In the year 10,000, what are you doing?
Well, floating for starters, just because. probably just, you know, just laying back, floating from place to place. Just mug of coffee in my hand. Just kind of. I'm assuming at this point there'll be no gravity, by the way. Just everything's floating.
So the coffee is top-notch.
Yeah. It's obviously not from a dripping coffee maker.
No, it's just floating in the air, so you just kind of go push your weight forward and just kind of allow, like, Pac-Man your way through coffee. That's pretty much it. I wanted to do anything else. That'll be a life.
Great. Thank you guys so much. That has been Phillip's Corner. Yay.
All right, are you guys ready to spend 5 weeks writing some sketches that we'll then perform after the break?
Yeah. Perfect. Next up,
Pat! Hey, Terry.
Yeah, yeah.
I was looking through the fridge and, well, the freezer, I guess, and some of my sherbet's gone.
Okay.
Well, Terry, It's just...
Okay.
I know that we're the only people in this house for the most part.
You don't know that. I mean, we think that.
Well, do you know if someone else is in the house?
No, that's okay. What we think. We think that we're the only ones that live in this house.
Well, either way, so there's two problems. Either you're eating some of my sherbet, or...
That's definitely a possibility.
Do you think it's the possibility that we should follow?
That's one possibility. There's so many possibilities.
Well, that's a frustrating possibility. But a terrifying possibility is that we're being robbed by someone who breaks into our house and eats my sherbet.
The sherburglar.
That's an adorable name. Right? But what is wrong with your cat right now?
Okay, also, Kitty. Kitty likes sweets.
Kitty, do you think your cat's eating
the
sherbet?
That's a possibility. Right now we're up to three.
Well, that one's even more frustrating because I hate your cat.
What?
No offense.
Fuck.
He just makes a lot of weird noises all the time.
Kitty likes Foley art. He likes to fill the house with noise.
It's just so frustrating.
So Skelly's been working on for several years. Good kitty. Good kitty.
What is that? What is he doing?
He's working on his creaky door opening.
And walking?
Yeah.
Ugh. I just want him to shit in his litter box once in a while.
Okay, I've been meaning to talk to you about this, Buck.
What?
Okay, I've been cleaning out Kitty's litter box, and there are some poops in there. There are some poops in there that... Look, I'm not...
No, you don't have to. I have been pooping in.
What, Buck?
I spend a lot of time in the basement working on my woodwork. And sometimes, just honestly, recently, it's been easier to poop in the litter box than go all the way upstairs. All
right, I've been eating your sherbet.
Okay, well, now at least we're square.
Gunshot.
That's terrible.
He hasn't reached his 10 years yet. He's not great at it.
Well, either way, you should really... He just said the words gunshot. So that's maybe what you should be marketing.
Okay. All right, we're working on a, we got this this new litter that we're trying to, it's four shut-ins, but we need a good name for it. It's something that people can, they can use the litter box with their cat. It's almost like a buddy
system.
People
poop.
People poop.
Yeah.
People poop. Would it be like a people poop scoop that comes with it? Or?
Yep, 100%.
100% people poop scoop. All right, we'll put that down. Let's see, we got a people poop scoop. Anybody else for people cat poop litter?
Clumps for dumps.
Perfect.
Clumps for dumps.
I like
all
that.
Right.
I like that. That can come with a scoop, too.
Yeah, the scoop's going to come either way. That's good. Clumps for dumps. All right.
We brainstorming science stuff here at
yeah.
all?
Oh. Bring it if you got a good ingredient or something like that.
Well, what I would love is if you poop in the litter box and it somehow becomes food you can eat. So, do you see what I'm saying?
No, I see exactly what you're saying.
Like, if there was a way to make it a donut?
Yeah.
Or a Long John is probably what it looked most like. That would be outstanding.
Lots of litter is made from corn. So is maybe if there's
like a corn donut.
Like a dough that you could poop into.
If you're wondering if the methane within the poop could actually formulate with the corn from which the methane would originally come from, the answer is yes.
So the box doesn't have to be an oven. Doesn't have to be a hot box.
No, it does not have to be a hot box. I'm saying that if the litter actually coats the said poop, it will become its own new food, much like a Long John.
That's great. I think we got it. But does the poop stay poop?
No, it will penetrate, becoming a new type of food that I would like to call a doodle.
All right.
Yeah.
But I need to make sure that what I'm putting in my body is right. So is it...
We'll list some nutrition facts
on
there.
Thank you. That's all I want.
Absolutely.
It's gluten-free. So there you go.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
And great. Full of fiber.
And full of fiber.
I have another meeting, so I shouldn't even have been in this meeting.
Thanks,
so,
Rick.
Yeah.
See you thanks for coming by, Rick.
Bye.
See you.
Door open. Door shut.
Oh, I shouldn't have run that marathon today. Whew. I'm feeling it.
Perspire.
You look a little down. You look a little wasted away.
Yeah, well, I've forgotten to eat breakfast.
Forgot to eat breakfast before a marathon?
Before a marathon. I woke up. And I was like, ooh, what's going on outside? It was the starting line for a marathon, so I just...
Well, at that point, you're just going to go.
I just went. Didn't put my shoes on or nothing. Ran the whole thing in my slippers.
Huh. Yeah, they've blown away.
Yeah. All I got's the tops. Slipper tops.
Man.
Oh,
you might want to sit down.
Yeah. Oh, wait, it's today Saturday?
It is.
Oh, I missed my daughter's graduation.
Well, there'll be plenty more of those.
I hope so.
Yeah, that's one of those, it just happens a lot.
Oh, I'm glad you're my neighbor, Earl. Yeah.
Thanks.
You always know how to brighten me up.
Most people don't call me by my first name, but yeah.
Well.
We're friends now.
I guess we are.
Yeah.
After 17 years, we're more than just neighbors.
Yeah.
Friends.
Well, I'm gonna go inside.
Okay. All right. Is it?
Door open.
He's gone.
Slam.
Oh, he's just staring at me through the screen door. Is that you, Earl, or is that the wind?
A little bit of both.
Okay. Bird!
To get you.
No, I'm not, coming to get you. I just have no energy. I just ran a marathon.
Not today. I want it to be a fair fight.
You got my arm.
That's just a reminder of what I can do to you.
I didn't need a reminder. I read about you in books.
I love, here's my business card.
Thank you.
Called all the ways I'm gonna fuck you up.
Whoa. Get out of here, Bird!
I'm going to my kid's graduation.
Bird!
Thank you all for joining me at my book reading. I'd like to read one of my favorite passages from my autobiography, All the Ways I'm Gonna Fuck You Up.
Did you bring the cookies in the back? They're not there.
No, I'm here to read from my book.
There's
no
cookies?
There are no cookies. Usually there's cookies at these things
and milk percentages for people's choices
and rice milk.
Excuse me, Joel, I was told there were going to be cookies at this reading.
They're not back there. I looked.
What?
They're not
milk either.
No,
I'm not responsible for this, but this could be one of the ways that you might fuck somebody up.
Well, I'm just saying. Wheeler brought cookies when he did his reading.
He did. He made those.
Well, my name is Joel. And I'm not Joel Osteen, and I'm not Garrison Keillor.
Clearly not. Do you have a well-loved radio show?
Do you have manners?
Actually, I do have a well-loved radio show, but
How did you start such a huge congregation when you don't bring cookies?
Or milk?
It's, you know, people, usually my message is what resonates with people.
We like messages accompanied by a crunchy pastry filled with chocolate chips.
I'm happy to listen to whatever you have to say as long as I can get succulent chips in my mouth.
And then a soothing beverage to wash
it down.
You know
why are you so stuck on milk?
I have brittle bones, you bastard. I needed it.
Okay, well, I'm sorry that I really went off on you there. I didn't know your whole story.
Okay, Don't fuck me up, okay?
No, I won't.
That is not one of the ways that you would fuck somebody up.
Well, those guys both have low blood sugar right now.
Yeah.
And you fucked them up by not providing cookies.
Is your answer to how to fuck people up always going to be finding God?
Generally, yeah. It all kind of leads back around to that. Where you find God and you get fucked up.
So I guess I don't need to read your book and I don't get cookies.
Well, or milk. It's really about the journey of getting fucked up. It's not so much about, you know, I mean, you know that Huck Finn painted a fence.
I didn't.
Spoiler alert.
I didn't know that.
Ugh.
Sorry.
I bet Huck Finn also got plenty of cookies being a 9-year-old.
Cookie milk delivery.
Hey,
Joel, look at me. Look me in the eyes, Joel.
What?
I just fucked you up.
Garrison Keillor, thanks.
Hey, no problem. You're the best.
Well, I'm Garrison Keillor.
You're our prairie home.
You can
companion.
Tell because of that swagger that he's really Garrison Keillor.
I'm out of here.
Bye, GK.
excuse me, Abe.
Yeah.
Great job on the trial yesterday.
Well, thank you.
Just a couple of questions
I
have for you. You were supposed to be proving that man's guilt, But you ended up making him innocent.
Well, he seemed like a cool guy.
Well, yeah, he did. Everybody in the office agrees. But, you know, that wasn't your job. So, nobody's real mad. Well, the family's mad. But nobody in the office is real mad. We were just wondering, maybe not called a punishment, but could you put together the potluck? Oh, come on, don't. You did the opposite of what your job was.
It seemed like the right thing at the time. His smile was so precious.
It's a beautiful smile, but he killed a lot of people.
I suppose wearing the bloody clothes from the crime would have been something I could have used, but.
Yeah.
He brought cookies.
Hey, you know what? Hindsight is 20/20, so let's just keep moving forward. If you could put together the potluck, and everybody would really love a potato sack race this year. So if you could put those things together, we're just going to forget about it.
Donna has dietary restrictions, right?
Yes, that's right. Are you hearing what I'm saying? We're trying to ignore the fact that you let a killer go. And that's all right. We're asking for you to do is put together the potluck and maybe have a potato sack race.
So I shouldn't invite Terry the murderer then?
No, absolutely not. Can you see how bad that would look if someone took a photo?
He doesn't have any friends anymore.
Well, good grief. I don't think you should be his friend.
But we're...
He was called the friend killer. He killed his friends.
Oh, shit. We're supposed to get milk and cookies later.
Oh, you better not do that.
Uh-oh. I better call him back and let him know I have to cancel.
Yeah. Door. I'm going to go get McDonald's.
Phone ringing.
Hello.
Phone ring.
Hello.
This is Marge from the school.
Oh, Marge. What can I do for you today?
Okay.
Seems like only yesterday that you called with something for me to do from the school.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well. Okay.
Yeah.
It's just that we still need you. You promised you would help run the school the pizza party.
Yeah, I did.
And it's happening now, and you're not here.
Well, I promised I'd help. So.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Did you realize that it's now?
Well, you just told me it was now. Yeah.
Okay, but did you before now? Like, well, but now you know. I know you know now. But now that you know, are you going to come?
Well, have I been invited?
Yesterday, I asked you and you promised you would help.
Yeah, I promised I would help, but I didn't get invited. I don't want to go to a party I didn't get invited to.
Okay, technically.
Weird.
Okay.
Right? I'm not a party crasher. Marge. I know, on you.
Sent you an invite. I just thought you were supposed to be the host, the greeter. You're supposed to greet and...
Awkward town, right? If I wasn't even invited, like, welcome to this party that I can't go to. Not gonna do that.
Okay. But now that you know, I would like to formally invite you to the pizza party that started half an hour ago.
You
were supposed to greet all the guests too.
Thank you for the invite. Wow.
I'm sorry to interrupt your call. I know you're on the phone now. I'm sorry. I want to apologize for interrupting, but I'm also interrupting to let you know that one of the kids is holding all of the pizzas and not giving any of the pizza to the guests.
Mine!
And it's not a party.
Pizza
it's not a pizza party. Yeah. It's a pizza hostage situation. So
is that Principal Delano?
Okay.
Hi. Hey.
I have the phone, and I don't think that Principal Delano can hear you, but I can relay a message.
Oh, yeah, relay. I say hi.
Well, first of all, Bethany, you were supposed to hand out the pizza. It turns out that one student is holding all of the pizza. You're supposed to greet all the guests as they came in, and then you're supposed to deliver the pizza.
It sounds like an awful lot of work for something that does not sound very fun at all happening.
This is the police. Put the pizza down.
One kid is taking...
Papa John, no!
Okay, you can't hear this because you're on the phone.
Put the pizza down.
It's kind of loud. I can kind of hear some yelling.
Put the pizza down slowly or we will shoot.
Put it on speakerphone so you can hear. Okay.
We will shoot.
The police are going to shoot the child with the pizza.
School shootings are nothing to me. Choke on.
Gunshot!
Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Those are such... It sounds so horrific.
Gotcha!
I'm so glad I wasn't at that party. That could have happened to me.
Gotcha!
I know you're on the phone. I know. I'm sorry for interrupting again.
Oh, principal.
Hey.
It's Bethany. Tom's mom.
Gotcha!
I just want to say, first of all, I'm sorry for interrupting yet a second time. And then also the other thing is that all those beats now has blood on it. So that's bad.
Yeah, Bethany. Okay, yes, it seems Marge. Like the new problem is that some of the pizza has blood on it, and some of the kids have blood allergies.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm glad I didn't come to that party because I have a blood allergy as well.
Hey, Bethany. The Mentalist has been on pause for like 5 minutes now. Do you want to come back and watch it?
Yeah, I do. I really do. Yeah, you know, I'm actually busy today. Thank you for the invite to the party. But I was watching The Mentalist.
Oh,
and, you
I love
know,
that show.
I'm inviting you over, March.
Oh my God, that's so nice to
it's
be here.
It's happening right now. Come on over. You just need, if you could bring some pizzas, that would be great. Don't, none of them with blood on them.
Oh, okay.
My husband has a blood allergy, and so do I. But we do enjoy your company.
I'll be right over. Creak. Slam.
Wait, where are you going? Where are you going?
Oh.
What are you doing in this office? Get out of this office!
I'm principal.
Get out of this office!
I'm a principal.
You start walking slower.
What?
Gunshot! 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 Gunshot!
Oh.
Gunshot!
Death.
Okay, Officer Dark. We sent you this pizza party to keep order, and you murdered everyone. You did the exact opposite of your job.
Hey, buddy, it's okay. You can talk to us.
Here's what happened. The kid took all the pizza hostage. I gave the kid an opportunity to put the pizzas down. He did it really fast, and so I just shot him.
So he can... Okay. Okay, when they comply, you're supposed to not shoot. You did
They're
the
supposed to comply
opposite.
Fast, or slowly. He complied quickly, and I was like, why is he putting a pizza down so fast? I bet he has a gun. So I shot him. And then the principal, what's he doing in that office?
In the principal's office?
Just seemed like he shouldn't have been there. So I shot him.
Okay, it seems like you did the exact opposite of your job, so we're not going to call this a punishment. But you're in charge of the Secret Santa this year?
Surprise!
No, thanks.
Hey, buddy, look at it as an opportunity.
I don't want this. Gunshot.
Bleeding. Dead.
Gunshot.
I've looked over your test results, and it seems that this large area full of blood is a blood allergy.
Ooh, no.
Yeah. Yeah, so and we tried to put the Band-Aids on it and the stitches, but you know what? We're going to take that out. It's just an allergy.
Oh.
We're going to send you home with some Claritin.
So am I going to be able to live? I mean, I've got blood inside of me.
Yeah, you know, that's something we don't know yet.
Whoa, so like almost all my body's allergic to blood, but not my veins?
Maybe. You could be in a constant state of allergenic problem.
That explains the rash.
Yeah, it does. See, the thing about doctors is we're not fortune tellers. I don't know if you're going to live or die.
Cut to that part of doctor school.
If you want to understand the true nature of doctoring, you have to understand that you are also fortune tellers, but you must not tell anybody.
Cut back.
So it's not, I might have an inkling you might survive to tomorrow at 2 in the afternoon, but
what?
I can't say that that's a true thing.
You're supposed to meet with my lawyer.
Am not a fortune teller. You might be alive until Sunday. You might not make it past this appointment.
Oh.
It's up to you. I'm just going to give you a prescription for Claritin, which might be over the counter now, so you don't even need a prescription.
We see that the test results are actually just tarot cards.
Over here, we've got 2 cups. And what that means, drink your Claritin with 2 cups of water.
All right. I think I can do that. What does that tiger eating a man signify?
Don't let that freak out.
Doctor, I have shredded all of his the paperwork, so he
Thank
has
you.
Never been here according to
Thank
the law.
Thank you. Thank you. Excellent. Nicely done, nurse.
You're welcome.
Marie.
Oh, thank you.
She's very nice. The tiger eating the man.
Yeah.
This, even though it says death on the bottom, don't take it literally. death just means like an end and a stop. It's more and of a no metaphor. More. Yeah, so just think of it as like the slamming of a door.
Or gunshot.
Yeah. So all I need you to do now is to remove your shoes and leave your wallet with me.
Sounds like a plan. Slip, slip, throw. I bought the door now, creak.
Hey, man, I just stole all the sherbet. I just got all the sherbet. You're going to have some sherbet with me? It's hot. Not, it's not really. It's not. It's cold. It's cold sherbet, but it's hot because it got.
Shut the fuck up, man. I don't know what is going on with you.
I stole some sherbet. I'm on an adrenaline high. Because all the shirt I just stole, I just broke into a house.
You need to freeze that shit. Then what? I'll eat a bunch of it with you.
Freeze like a police officer would say freeze?
Nah, man, put the sherbet in the freezer.
Why you would have it with me?
I'm not going to eat your hot sherbet.
Why would I? Why would I invite you to a park if you were not going to have some of my sherbet?
Well, why would I eat your hot, soupy sherbet?
But it's hot in a way that it's illegal.
So, all we have to do is wait for the perps to actually eat the sherbet because we've actually planted devices in there to be able to track the sherbet, but it won't activate until it's in the stomach.
I'm going to put this sherbet in this dog.
I stole this sherbet. You're just going to give it to a dog.
Yeah, that's how I'm insulted. So I'm going to insult you by putting all this sherbet in a dog.
Rainbow sherbet.
That's right.
These are the fastest fucking perps I've ever seen. They're going through this neighborhood like they're on an adrenaline high.
It's like they found adrenaline in its most crystallized form and they just went on a rampage.
I've never seen anybody on a sherbet jag move this quickly.
Look at them, they're even wearing sherbet pants now. Have you ever seen what it does to a man's clothes or skin?
I've not.
So you want to go to Dairy Queen?
Oh, come on! Man,
why had some ice cream? I want to have some ice cream.
I want some hot treats and sweet cold
cool
sweets.
Hot eats, cool treats.
I want a bunch of food at different temperatures.
Welcome to Dairy Queen. We got a bunch of food at different temperatures. How can I help you?
My friend probably wants hot sherbet. That stupid fuck.
No. I want cold ice cream and hot chicken fingers.
You gonna put them together?
You probably will.
I never thought of that as a possibility.
Try to eat the sherbet with the chicken fingers.
I was just curious. I mean, it's up to you what
you
do.
Is that something
you
can do? Is that a?
It is.
Can I make an ice cream sandwich out of the hot chicken fingers and cold ice cream?
It's American. It's summertime. I mean, you can really do what you want.
My mind's being blown wide open.
Here you go.
Oh my God. His brain just exploded everywhere.
We're not equipped to clean that up. I guess,
give me a gift card.
Yeah, all right.
My friend died at your restaurant.
I can't. I'll tell you his food. What, you're going to want to come back now? Is that what you're telling me? Is that you're going to come back?
I want a $400 gift card. Because every time I go drive by here, I'm going to be like, my stupid friend down here.
But that means if you drive by there thinking that, then you're never going to come in. Like, why $400? Why
be grieved? How come you argue with me? Just give me either that or give me the Blizzard machine. Just give me the Blizzard machine.
You just said you begrieved. I thought...
Isn't that the word I wanted?
I think it's aggrieved.
No, aggrieved would mean that he had done something to me.
Listen, I can give you...
I can't be aggrieved.
I can give you the food that he was going to eat.
I don't want his food. I want that Blizzard machine. And give me this counter.
Well, the counter, you're the first person to ask for a counter in that section.
I'm not the first person to ask for the Blizzard machine?
No. People like Blizzards.
We're all right.
Nobody likes counters.
Here come the police.
Slam, slam.
Gunshot.
Gunshot. Gunshot.
Gunshot.
Thanks for shooting him. I'm going to take some police.
Next up, Pat.
And that's our show. Thank you so much to Joe Bozek, Heather Meyer, Mike Fotis, Ian Fishman, and Abe Vanderbent for coming over nearly a year ago to talk to us about Sketch Lab. I wish I could tell you when Sketch Lab will be returning, if it does, but that is undetermined at the moment. Same can be said for Stage Match. I wish I could tell you when that will return, if it will. If it does, you can see my Brave New Workshop Student Union House team, the Houlihans, performing there. Since you're interested in sketch, I'd like to point out a Noise Picnic podcast, Cold Read, which is a sketch podcast hosted by Alex Colliard and Gubby Kubik, and produced by Jeff Arcan. Season 3 is coming out soonish. I'm honored to be on the writing staff, along with nearly a dozen other fantastic sketch writers. And there will be a second Cold Read live at the Bryant Lake Bowl on March 1st. Joe Bozic and Mike Fotis from this episode will be guests, along with Lupe Marashevsky, Aaron Shepard, and Katie Kessler. So go support Sketch by going to that show and listening to that podcast until, hopefully, Sketch Lab returns. As always, go to my YouTube channel, youtube.com/PhilipSimondet, for minimum fare, songs, sketches, whatever. And keep in touch with Matt and I on facebook.com/nextatbat. Send us an email, nextatbatpodcast@gmail.com, and on Noise Picnic, where you can find our podcast, Cold Read, and several other fantastic podcasts. Subscribe to us in iTunes, rate and review, and until next time, as always, praise Jaibosh.